Welcome to a new episode of DC Spotlight. I haven't done one of these in a long time because I have no co-host yet. The co-host I was planning on got ill and then had some family things to deal with. So I'm probably going to do this by myself for a while anyway, until I don't want to do it anymore. But I'm going to cover today comic book that made me laugh. It was a really good one. Some of these Superman families are gems, these reprints. I think this is a reprint. Let me look at my database real quick and see. 177. Yeah, reprints from Jimmy Olsen number 74, Lois Lane number 53. Superman's girlfriend, number 53. Sorry, and there's got to be one other, unless the other one is Supergirl story. But I think that's a new story. So I think this featured one new story and two reprints, and the one new story wasn't as good as the two reprints, but it still was really good. So this is Superman Family 177. It has Superman Family Giant. It's a 50-cent cover price. It is from June, July of 1976. And the other thing to notice, it says Supergirl presents the Superman Family. Interesting. There are a few Superman families I still need. I would like to complete it. It ran from 1974 to 1982. I do have most of. I still need 222, which is a dollar comic. I need to get that. But I have from 205 on. I'm missing 204, which has a beautiful cover with the Enchantress on there. Fighting Supergirl. And this looks fantastic. And then I'm missing 200. 200 looks really familiar. Like, I had this as I was a kid, and I don't know why I don't have it now. And maybe it's just a misinventory issue, because I know that cover. 200 has Superman. Holding back a curtain and says, "I'm drawing back the curtain of time for a peek into the possible future as Clark and Lois celebrate their wedding anniversary. Can you identify everyone at the party? Check your answers at the end of the story." I recognize Jimmy Olsen, Supergirl, Clark, Lois, Lucy, Perry White, Bruce Wayne, Dick Grayson, Morgan Edge, Lana Lang, and I'm lost on the others. So I missed three of the test. But if you see that cover, that was an interesting one I'm missing. That's 200. And I have 199. And I'm missing 192. That one's a dollar comic. It has Superman come and help Speedy and me beat the gang of Olsen clones. Sorry, Jimmy. The rest of the Superman family is having a bigger troubles. I think this is when they had original stories, and then you get into the 50 centers and their reprints. But they have some original stories. And then I have a good chunk in a row until 183. That has Lois on a bed floating, and Superman's looking like, "Lois, help Superman!" And then another good chunk, and then I'm missing 180. That has a Supergirl. And then from there on, from on the 50 centers, I'm missing quite a few. I'm missing more than I have, but I have some odds and ends. But this one I picked up at Ed's Cards and Comics. He got a new collection in, and then I saw it, and he had four Superman families, and I had three of them. So I pulled out my comic book base app, and I unfortunately have to scroll to Superman family. I wish there was a search entry one where I could just type Superman family and it'd go there. And I saw that I was missing this one, and it was a gem. It has Supergirl presents the Superman family. The logos on the left are a full-bodied image of Supergirl, Jimmy Olsen, and Lois representing the three stories that they have. Then it has some clown on the cover, but his face is cut off with the logo, which is a weird choice. And he's holding Supergirl like when Supergirl died on Crisis on Infinite Earths. And it says, "She's mine. I'll take Supergirl away from Earth forever. Why does this costume stranger seek to make Supergirl his bride of the stars?" And then you have a story, how can Superman marry Lana while Clark marries Lois? And that was a great story. And then, who is Jimmy Olsen's secret love? Another great reprint. Whoever put these together must have a glorious sense of humor. The first story is an interesting one. It's plotted by Kerry Bates, scripted by Elliot S. Magan, and illustrated by Kirk Schaffenberger, edited by Julie Schwartz. And just like most stories at this time in the 70s, they would have a flash forward in the on the first page. So you would see what's going to happen, and then it would tell you how you got there. So in the prologue, they introduce the birth of a character called Reynar. He's blessed with a star mate who was born at the exact same time, and he has to seek out his star mate. That's the goal of these aliens. They just go do that, and I guess that's their whole purpose in life, is when they're born, they have to find their star mate, their actual. I think a lot of people would want to find their star mates in real life, but in this case, he is kind of a malicious guy. It has a scene at the Fortress of Solitude, and if you ever see the old Fortress of Solitude in the 70s, you'll even see this on some of the giant size, what do you call it, Treasury editions. You'll see when Superman used to take this giant key and open this gold-plated door that's in the middle of the Arctic. Only he could open it because he's the only one that could lift this key. I'm sure. Maybe he has to have like a fingerprint identification too, because I'm sure Martian Manhunter or some of the other characters could lift this key and get in, or maybe even jump in the keyhole if they could get in there, because that's a giant ass keyhole, man. Definitely the Atom could probably shrink in and get in there if there's like some kind of contraption that keeps them getting through there. But Supergirl, there's Kandor, the bottled city of Kandor that Brainiac shrunk, and she decides to go visit her family. So she's able to go into the bottle. I don't know a lot about how she can get into the bottle and how her parents can't get out of the bottle. Like how if you go one way or the other, I don't know where that was explained in the Superman comic book, so if you know, let me know. But anyway, she gets there and somebody almost hits her, so things are a little weird. She gets to her place where her parents are, and she's attacked by a robot. It sort of looks like a vacuum cleaner. It's a manservant robot, and she say it's saying, "Danger! Intruder, danger." And he says, he should have recognized me. And then dad and mom are there, and they're like, "Why are you in our house? I'm going to report you to the police. What are you doing here?" And she's like, "What's going on, mom and dad?" And then we have a quick advertisement for Blow Pops and the Mighty Meat Snack. Step into some Slim Jim. It's interesting how that carton of Slim Jims looked like us, like cigarettes at the time. And then you can buy some magic brain calculator, magic color clouds, X-ray specs, a spy scope, potato gun, money maker, 10 instruments in one. I that might be useful. Sneezing powder, magic soap powder, and a flesh-eating plant. My wife has one of those. That is a what do you call it? Venus flytrap. Except ours doesn't eat anything. He just sits there and enjoys the sunlight. So the robot finally drops her. She's like, "Let me go. Is this some insane joke? I'm your daughter." And he like gets even more pissed off. "If I had a daughter, she'd be nothing like you. Get out of here before I turn over you to the police security." So she leaves all sad, and she's like, "I guess I'm like an orphan," because she was an orphan on Earth as well. Why has my memory been banished from Kandor? So she can't figure that out. She goes back, and I guess she's an advisor at New Athens School in Southern Florida, and some girl's talking about troubles with her mom and the boyfriend she has, saying she's too young to have a boyfriend. And she says, "I can't even concentrate on her problems because I got problems of my own." Meanwhile, there's an observatory that's going to catch fire or explode, and she uses her super speed to put out the fire and save the two scientists there. And then there's this clown. He's got a star on his chest like Starman. He's got purple leggings and a midsection that's purple, and then yellow boots and yellow arms and bracelets, and he's got these funky hair patches on his shoulders, kind of like Kraven the Hunter, except it's just on his shoulder. It doesn't go over his main shoulder, just where the arm meets the shoulder, and has a collar. And he says, "I ignited the building with stellar parabola beams focused through the telescope." And he says, "You, who are you?" And he says, "You're my star mate. We're meant to be together." And he throws a comet punch at her, which looks like he actually throws a ball of light, hits her in the face, and says, "Hey, you're going to be my star mate. We're meant to be." And she's like, "What the hell? I don't know who you are." So she knocks him out with some super breath. But that he seems to be absorbing her powers and becoming more powerful as time goes on. And then it explains how he went on a search as a... It looked like he was like 8 to say, "Hey, I'm leaving you, parents. I have to go meet my star mate. This is the person I'm going to breed with." And he spent years from his adolescence until he became like 21, I guess, to find Supergirl. And he ended up finding Argo City, a floating chunk, and landing on there. And that's where he met her parents at the time. This is before they got bottled, I guess. She wasn't there. That's because they already launched her into space towards Earth. And he keeps on going on his search, but he explains to them the race of the Hawkwi are ruled by the star cluster. Look at it, for the precise position of its suns dictate that you and I are to be star mates. When we are bonded, Bathroth, my power will be unlimited. So his goal is to bond and mate with her, and he will become ultimately more powerful than he is already, and his powers are growing with time. So she says, "I got to get the hell out of here. I got to hide." He puts like a dome over where she is at that college or university. And the campus is now bottled in, and she's stuck there. So she changes to Linda Danvers, and she's trying to remember that name of his race. His name is Rannar, but she's trying to remember the race because she was warned about that race by her parents, but she doesn't remember why because it was a long time ago. And then she sees a large line meeting at the auditorium, like they're brainwashed. He brainwashed everybody at the university. And they came over, and he used a wand to convert them over to like zombies with an outfit like his, except they don't have those wonderful hairy ass shoulder things, whatever the hell they are. And she says, "I gotta pretend like I'm part of the zombie, or he's gonna find out who I am." But when he touches the wand to her, she turns back to Supergirl, and then he grabs her legs, and she tries to fly away. They have a fight in the air. She steals the wand, but the wand takes her for a ride because she can control it. So he can control it. So he's like knocking her through trees and everything. And she said, "I'm gonna make a deal with you. I want the people of New Athens returned to normal with no memory of what happened to them. Second, I want 1 hour to say farewell to the earth, which has been my home. Take it or leave it, mate. I am quite acquainted with your silly concepts of honor and trustworthiness. With w will do little good among my people, but I understand now that you will be duty bound because of them to return to me. The conditions will be met, sweet star mate." So she agrees to make this stuff. Somehow along the line, she flew out into space and blockaded out the stars, so when they're in the spaceship, they get near his home, the stars aren't aligned, and he's like, "Get the fuck out of here," you know? He's like, "You're cursing my people and the whole idea of the stars," and she fooled him so she could go back home. She goes back to Kandor, and then her parents are know who she is. All of a sudden, I don't know how they like brainwashed themselves to pretend they didn't know who she was, and then all of a sudden their brains are restored, but that's the end of it. Nice coupon for learning accounting, business management, personal management, real estate, diesel mechanics, becoming a secretary, motel hotel management, art training, music instruction. Dental office assistance, stenotype, writing, computer programming. And that would be an interesting one. Electronics, supervisory management, restaurant management, executive law, banking and finance, an administrative assistant, air conditioning and refrigeration, high school diploma program, and traffic and transportation. So you can mail away this coupon and I guess get some documentation that could lead you to a career path. Then we get one of my favorite stories. This is an odd one. It flashes forward again, so you get Clark marrying Lois and she's sobbing, and Superman marrying Lana and she's happy, and Lois is crying in the background. So again, in these stories in the 70s, you get the flash forward. And then let's tell you how we got there. So they're on a flight, a maiden flight of a new English airliner that has so many buttons. Like they're press. This woman is showing. Look at it. The stewardess comes and say, "Look at this fire protection," and she lights a fire on the plane. Starts burning shit on a tray and says, "The ultra modern advance is equipped with every advanced safety device." And there's like air that goes and puts out the fire as soon as she, it was extinguished as soon as she lit it. And then they push some more gadgets and they got food to pop out of the back tray of their seats. Lois starts fidgeting with buttons. Like, who put this plane together? This button ejects them out of a plane with their whole parachute. The three-seater ejects Lana, Clark, and Lois out of the plane. Like they would leave this button enabled so people just eject themselves out of the plane. And she's playing with the buttons, and that's the first button she hits. It ejects them out of the plane. They go through some cloud coverage onto an island. And then they see these barbarians there, and they meet Chieftain Droost. And he talks about the first thing he says, "I am Droost, chieftain of this valley. Who are you? Which of these wenches is your wife?" And Clark says, "My name is Clark Kent. I'm not married, and neither are Lois and Lana here." And then he says, "Then we will hold them as prisoners for violating the law of the valley." And they say, "But we just arrived. How could we have broken any laws?" And then he explains to them that every woman has to be wed to them, like wed to a man, and have children, or they will be put into this cave of doom. And they basically walk in there and they become like stone stalactites. So Lois is like, "Screw this shit. I'm not getting married." They walk into the cave and Lois comes out and her head's turning to stone. Some water dripped on her hair and she's turning to stone. And Lana's arm is turning to stone. But Clark sees it and he says, "I'm going to hit this with my X-ray vision to reverse the effects." I don't know how that. The physics or how that actually works, but he reverses the effects and they don't turn to stone, but they have to abide by the rules of marrying these caveman barbarian type characters. And Lois says, "It looks like Superman won't be saving us since I'm the one that got you into this mess. I'll volunteer to marry one of these characters. I'll pick this specimen." And this guy looks like a caveman. Like he's got caveman shorts, a hairy ass chest, a Neanderthal head, and he says, "So you would marry Valdor, a wise choice, wench." And then he hits her and says, "Here, that's to teach you who is the lord and master. I'll rule you with an iron hand, and you'll love it." And Clark says, Clark gets into the fray, and the caveman guy says, "Try to hit me, will you?" And then he's like, "Oh, I'm going to give away that I'm Superman." So he has to pretend that he falls to the ground. And he says, "Clark, you're a weakling, but try to defend me. I know you've always loved me, so I'm going to marry you." Because she knows if she marries a man that they won't have to go into the Cave of Doom. And Lana's like, "Hey, Lois Clark, don't leave me." And then she says, well, Clark's thinking to himself, maybe I can have Superman marry Lana and save her. And then they're getting married, and the guy's doing the ceremony, and they both say, "I do." And Lois is crying. Like, she's literally crying, saying she wanted to marry Superman, not this buffoon. And anyway, Clark has to hide his identity, and he causes some. Fissures to come out with smoke and comes back as Superman and says, "I'm gonna marry Lana," and she's happy. Like she's like, "Yeah, we're gonna get married. I can't wait to be his wife." And he goes, Superman's like, "I won't take part in your feud with Lois. After we're married, I'll still be her friend." And she goes, "Of course, dear." But as she's thinking, she goes, "But as soon as I'm his wife, I'll lay down the law." Lana, have you seen Clark? We're building our wedding altar. And he says, "No, I haven't seen Clark, but speaking of wedding altars, guess who I'm marrying? Superman." And she's like, "I should have waited." And she's like, "You know he's just marrying you to save your life. You don't have much pride if you're accepting him on those terms." And she goes, "Ha ha, sour grapes. You wish you were in my shoes. He'll learn to love me once we're married, and you'll be stuck with Clark Kent." And she goes, "Hold everything. Speaking of Clark, isn't it odd that Superman and Clark are not in the same place at the same time?" So they both start to think, something's up. And Superman has to distract them. He goes up and sees a helicopter that's searching for them in the valley. And he's like, he leads them to the valley to come rescue everybody. And Clark shows up, and she goes, "Here comes Clark, limping along as if his leg was injured. I wonder." Because Superman said that he was in a he was making up an excuse for him, saying he's injured in a valley, but I've come to rescue you guys. The Whirlybird helicopter scares away those cavemen and barbarians, so they get into the plane. And Superman says, "But Lois, this doesn't have to interfere with our wedding plans, does it?" And Lois says, "Don't be ridiculous, Clark. I was going to marry you only to save myself from the Cave of Doom. You know it's Superman I love." God dang, she's so brutal to him. And then so they get on the helicopter. What a close call. I nearly married Clark. And he's sitting right there. But now that I still have a chance to land Superman someday. And then Lana says, "I think to think I nearly married Superman. Oh well, perhaps I'll get another chance." And then Clark just sits in the back of his chair. What a pair. They're as clever as they are lovely. I'll probably marry one of them eventually, but which one will it be? The end. What a fantastic story. Oh, God. And then there's a great ad for limited collector's edition DC Comics. These are the treasury size comic books. There's a Batman one that has a great Batman with just the bat signal. And then there is one called More Secret Origins of Supervillains. That one I own, the Batman one I don't. One C44 and one C45, or you could order both. You basically could send away for them for $1.50. That was $1.50 for postage and handling. And if you wanted both, you could get it for $3 with $1 for postage and handling. There's a letters column and a statement of ownership. The total number of copies printed of this comic book were roughly 361,000. The actual number of copies of single issue published nearest to filing date are 350,446. Sales through dealers and carriers, street vendors, average number of copies each issue during 12 months was 167,000. Actual number of copies of a single issue published nearest to filing date 145,720. Mail subscriptions 2,000. There wasn't a lot of mail people getting stuff. Actual number of copies single published to the filing date. So this gave you a lot of sales numbers. It would be interesting to see if they were required to do such a thing today. Because now that we don't have the Diamond Top 100 or Wizard Top 100, we have no idea how anything is selling anymore. And we have multiple distributors, so who knows? And then you get the Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen by Kurt Swan and George Klein. This one is fantastic too. It gives you the flash forward of a woman, first a magician named Maggie the Magnificent, and the glorious starlet Sandra Rogers, which is, but one is Lucy Lane in disguise and one is Jimmy Olsen, and they don't know. They're both in disguise. So somebody hires Miss Lane, Lucy Lane, to go on Flight 408 and check on the pilots and stewardesses and report back their behavior so they can give raises or see who breaks company rules. And so she's going undercover. She's given a photo thing so she could take pictures of people that are breaking the rules. Her boss tells her, "Don't go on as Lucy Lane because you'll be recognized." So she puts on a wig and makeup and looks different. Meanwhile, Perry White says, "I need you to go undercover on this Flight 408 and get me the scoop on Slick Eddie. He's trying to sneak out of town on that same flight." And he goes, "Yes, boss, but you have to go undercover because everybody will recognize Jimmy Olsen." So he gets under disguised as Maggie the Magician. And she gets disguised as a scarlet, and she says, "God, I should call Jimmy and tell him I have to break our date tonight." But the airport phones are down, and he does the same. "I should call Lucy and make sure she knows I'm not going to make the masquerade party tonight." But he calls, and the airport phones are down, so he can't get a hold of her. So they both board the plane and sit right next to each other and flirt. And they don't know they don't know they're dating in real life, and they don't know in their aliases or their costume disguises that they're who they are. And he does a few tricks. He does a rubber chicken thing and says, "I want to eat this chicken. You just got a hamburger." And she says, he's thinking to herself, "I'll give the man seated next to me some half-baked explanation for taking that snapshot." Because she took a picture of an employee flirting with an actor instead of checking the passenger seat belts. And she said she'll get a well-deserved reprimand. Jesus Christ. And then they start flirting. Jimmy, as the Maji the magician, is thinking she's fascinating. I think I need to get to know her more to get her interested in me. And then she thinks, "I've never been so strongly drawn to a stranger. He's so smooth and sophisticated, so unlike Jimmy." And then Jimmy's thinking, "Lucy isn't in the same league with this glorious babe. I'm falling for this gorgeous tomato." So they're really falling in love with each other in these disguises. So everything goes in there. She throws her thing, and then the wigs come down. She said, "I'm Sandra Rogers, a movie starlet visiting your country from England. The various wigs help me change my appearance whenever I play different roles." And he goes, "May I help you with this blonde wig?" And he says how blondes annoy him, and he's referring to Lucy. He goes, "May I help you? This blonde wig annoys me. It reminds me of a former girlfriend who was very fickle. I'll bet she's with some other guy right now." She's sitting right next to him with a red wig. And she goes, "Oh," she's thinking to herself, "oh dear, Maji doesn't like blondes, and my real hair is blonde. On second thought, I won't let him know the truth about myself just yet. I'll tell him someday after he's known me long enough to overlook his dislike for blondes." And they're thinking to each other, "Lucy will be all shook up when she finds out I'm dropping her for this new chick. I feel kind of sorry for her." And she's thinking to her, "It's so thrilling to know and care for a man so wonderful as Maji. Poor Jimmy's going to be heartbroken when he learns I met someone else." And they have, because of thick fog, they have to return to Metropolis. And they get off the plane and they're in the waiting room. There's the kids crying, and he goes, "Jimmy, as Maji the magician says, I'm going to do a trick." And he pulls out that wig, the blonde wig, and throws it on some old bald guy that's sitting there waiting to get back on the plane. And he said, "How dare you put a woman's wig on my head? Those curls make me look ridiculous." And he says, "Well, I'll fix that." He takes the wig and then puts the. So he now has a blonde toupee. And he says, "You may think that was funny, but I don't. I had to punch you in the nose." And they basically get out of it. And since they're grounded, they decide to go back to their alias positions and go to that masquerade party because they can't get back on the plane. So they're at the party, and Jimmy's dancing with Lucy. Lucy's dressed as a magician at a costume party, and Jimmy is d dressed as a red starlet. So they're both kind of dressed like themselves. They both go away and then get back into their aliases so they can board the plane. Well, this plane has a lot of fucking problems. So it is having issues, and they have to land on a submerged glacier. And because of the danger, they kiss, and she thinks they could drown eventually. But she goes, "How thrilling, the touch of his lips, so unlike Jimmy's." They are fucking Jimmy's lips. "I'm sure we won't crack up. Wow, compared to Sandra's smooch, Lucy's kissing a technique is for the birds." So she obviously kisses him differently. Jimmy says, "I have to let her know who she is, who I am. I have to use my signal watch. The signal watch is not there." But then Superman shows up without the signal watch. He uses super ventriloquist whisper to Jimmy, and he says, "I recognize you despite your disguise, but since you must be confidential mission, I won't give your identity away." And then he arrests Slick Eddie. Well, it turns out that Slick Eddie at the airport when they had to land again because of that fog stole Jimmy's watch, and he didn't even know about it, and triggered it, so Superman knew to go stop Jimmy. And later they're on their date, and they're thinking of their aliases. So they're, like, miserably dating now, and she's thinking of Maji, and he's thinking of Sandra. But they're each other, and then it says, "Maji and Sandra did meet again. Watch for the story in a future issue of Superman Family." So, God, if there's anybody that's listening that knows the answer to the Maji and when they appear again, please let me know, because I want to read the reacquaintance of Maji and Sandra. So, that was cool. And then we have Supergirl's boyfriends. This stuff I didn't know either. I knew that Supergirl dated Brainiac. When the Girl of Steel applied for membership at the Legion of Superheroes, she met Brainiac 5, who risked his life to save her from Kryptonite Meteor. I knew about that one. Two, on her first visit to Atlantis, Supergirl encountered Jero, a mirror boy who fell in love with her and had a number of adventures with her. I don't remember that guy. I remember Superman's Lori Loomis, but I don't remember Jero for sure. He's a merman, and she was a merwoman. We have number three. This is unusual, but later on in Peter David's run, I think we saw the same thing. But not his name was Supergirl's strangest suitor had to be Bronco Bill Starr, the human incarnation of the Comet the Superhorse. So it's almost like Comet the Superhorse could be Bronco Bill Starr. It was weird. So she was dating a horse. But later on, in Peter David's run, it does use that. So it's very strange. We got Dick Malvern lived in Midville Orphanage with Linda before they were adopted. He was Dick Wilson then. Later, when they both had foster parents, Dick regularly dated the Maid of Might. I don't know any of that, but that's interesting. And five, I bet you guys didn't know this. And did you know that Supergirl once almost married the imp from the fifth dimension, Mr. Mixlipidalic? Luckily, he was tricked into saying his name backwards before the vows were exchanged. That was pretty cool. This issue was absolutely fantastic. A 5 out of 5. I hope you enjoyed my talking through this. And I went about 30 minutes, and my wife had to listen to me because she was here. She went upstairs because she couldn't take it anymore. But that was a good issue. This was a DC Spotlight featuring Superman Family, number 177. Let me know what you think. And if you know when Maji and Sandra meet again in Jimmy Olsen, pal, please let me know what issue that happens, because I want to buy that issue if I can't find out on my own, and see what other shenanigans those two get into with their aliases, not knowing. I hope eventually they find out that they're really made for each other, I guess. If I put on this mustache, I kiss better. Huh, that's interesting. Well, thanks for listening, and I'll be back in 2 weeks or so with another DC Spotlight. Let me know what you think. You can reach me at Twitter X at Mike Myers Brunch, on Blue Sky at Mike Myers Brunch, on Facebook. You can find me at DC Noise Podcast. Click the like button, follow the episode threads there, and send me email at Mike@comicbooknoise.com. I want to thank you for listening, and I'll talk to you again. Bye.